You are quite right if you think that this is not Ajahn Brahm. That's a very precise observation, very correct observation. Who is this fellow sitting up there? And the reason I'm here, and my name is Ajahn Brahmali, in case you don't know that, Ajahn Brahm is doing the Friday night talk in Novamara. That's why he's not here. So he has asked me to come instead. So that's why I'm up here. So please don't be too disappointed. You'll get lots of stories and jokes and things later on. But tonight, not so many stories and jokes. That's the way I usually work. Yeah. So anyway, welcome to Dharma Grove Retreat Center. Maybe before I start with saying anything about meditation practice or whatever, is there anything that is not clear, that any instructions that aren't clear, or anything that you need to know, anything, any questions you have or whatever? Is everybody happy? Yeah? Everybody okay? Yeah? Okay, good. So please, if you have any questions, you can always ask, and we can take those questions as we go along, or even towards the end or whatever. That would be perfectly fine. Okay, so welcome to this wonderful retreat center. I think it is fair to say it is very difficult to find a retreat center quite like this almost anywhere in the world. It's a very high-quality retreat center, very nice rooms with your ensuite bathrooms, and very facilities here are really excellent, really superb facilities. And I have been around the world quite a bit, and wherever I go, I never find anything quite up to this standard. Maybe there are a few places, but it's actually quite rare. So please make use of these facilities in a good way, because these are quite exceptional. And by making use of them in a good way, what I mean is to make sure that you feel comfortable, you feel relaxed, you have a good time during the meditation retreat, and you have quite a bit of space here. And one of the wonderful things about having your own private room is that whenever you feel a little bit tense, or you feel a little bit relaxed, not relaxed, the opposite of relaxed, unrelaxed, whenever you need a bit of time for yourself, you can just go back, right? And you can just take it easy. You can lie down on the bed, you can make yourself a cup of tea, you can even read something or do something completely different if you want to do that. And that is a great asset of a place like this, the fact that you can actually spend whatever time you like by yourself, on your own, whenever you need to. And also one of the great assets here is the nature around here, right? When you come in here, you see there's so much forest around here. And for those of you, a few of you from Singapore, or even if you live in the city of Perth or whatever, you know that this is quite a special environment, and it's quite hard to find forest like this that is as peaceful as it is over here. So use that opportunity. If you want to go for a walk, you want to just relax, you want to have a look at the animal life, the kangaroos, or listen to the birds or whatever, have a walk around and listen, and just feel the sense of peace and the sense of beauty in the nature around here. And that in itself is very powerful. One of the amazing things when you read the suttas and you read the way the Buddha talked about nature, where some of the arahants, the great monks and nuns, talked about nature at the time of the Buddha, the way they spoke was basically praising nature. And they said how wonderful it is to, you know, to see the beautiful mountains, to see the trees, to see the animals, how wonderful and how peaceful that is. So there is, in other words, even if you're an arahant, even if you have reached full awakening, there are still certain things that you can delight in, that you can find something beautiful in there. And that is nature. So use that, and that will usually calm you down. One of the great differences between the city and the forest, when you go to a city, it has a kind of feeling of busyness about it, right? Why is it? Why does it feel so busy? Even if you go to the forest and it's a windy day, and the animals, the birds make a lot of noise, it doesn't feel as busy as the city. So why is that? And one of the reasons for that, I think, is that when you are in the city, it's like you can feel the drivenness of the people. You can feel people driving forward, working hard, pushing themselves to do this and to do that. And you can feel that, and that is like the willpower inside, right? The drive inside, the doer inside, the volition which drives people around. And you can actually, it's almost like when you go to a city, you can't really tune out from that. You have to kind of tune in to that vibe of the city life. But here in nature, you're away from that. There's no drive, there's no willpower, there's nothing that forces and drives things along. And that is, of course, just like meditation practice, right? When you withdraw the willpower from the mind, when you withdraw the willpower from the meditation, that's when you become peaceful. It is this willpower which is the problem. And that's why the forest is such a beautiful place compared to the city life. That's why you find peace in the forest, whereas the city is like, it has this energy about it, which is very kind of unsettling and restless, etc. So use the facilities well. Use them to make yourself feel relaxed, feel comfortable, feel happy, so you can enjoy this place. That is the right way of using the facilities here. There's nothing in particular, there's no particular right way or wrong way of doing a retreat. There's only, rather, there is a particularly wrong way or right way, but it's not about the routine or about what you do. It's about how you feel inside. And if you feel good inside, then you are doing the right thing. That is basically what it comes down to. So use the facilities well. Okay, so I'm going to say a few things about meditation practice, the way that I like to do it. Ajahn Brahm is obviously going to talk much more about this, but you know, here I have my chance to give my own two cents, so I'm going to do that anyway. One of the ways that I like to think about meditation is in terms of the middle way. Maybe I should ask first of all, can everybody understand me okay? Is it clear? Yeah, okay. I have a little bit of an accent. Some of my people think, oh, what is this strange accent I'm hearing here? And they get completely confused when they hear this accent. Okay, so good. You can hear me. That's great. And of course, one of the fundamental teachings of the Buddha is the idea of the middle way, right? Between the two extremes. And this idea of the middle way is a very useful way of thinking about meditation practice itself. And to start with, the very first thing about meditation practice is what to do with the body, right? So the middle way, according to Buddhism, is neither to have too much pain in the body on the one hand, nor to indulge the body on the other hand. And this is the middle way. So when you sit in meditation, and I know that most of you here who are like disciples of Ajahn Brahm already, you're not likely to kind of have too much pain, because Ajahn Brahm says, don't have any pain, just relax, have a good time. But even then, even though you know those instructions so well, still there is a tendency, I think it's part of just human nature or whatever, there's a tendency to go in that direction whereby we actually sit or walk or do things without feeling comfortable and relaxed enough. So be careful of that. I think it's a very human tendency. And I think it goes across all cultures. It certainly was part of the Indian culture at the time of the Buddha. I think it's part of many cultures today. I think most religions have this idea that pain is good. Pain is going to free the spirit from the bad flesh or something like that. But it doesn't work like that. The Buddha doesn't teach like that. So be careful of that tendency. Don't push the body too hard. Don't have pain. All this beautiful meditation chairs are here. Please use those chairs. If you can sit on the floor, of course, that's fine. It's not a problem. But it's not a competition that you have to sit on the floor. That makes you somehow a better meditator. Please don't think about this as a competition. It's a competition against yourself. How can I make progress in meditation? That's the only thing that matters. Everything else is really irrelevant. So it's about you, how you can make progress. So avoid the pain and move towards that sense of where the body is comfortable, where it's at ease. And it doesn't matter so much how you sit, the posture you have, whatever you do, as long as you are relaxed. So that is the one extreme, right? So avoid that one. The other extreme is the extreme where you indulge. And basically, when you are on a meditation retreat like this, where you have to keep the 8 precepts, it's very difficult to indulge. Okay, perhaps if you lie, you can lie in your bed, maybe perhaps too much. The beds are quite comfortable here. That's maybe the only way you can indulge on this kind of retreat. So don't be afraid of that. The way that you know that you indulge is if the mind goes out to the senses, it goes to the body, and it feels, oh, the body feels so nice, how wonderful, this is so pleasant, and you kind of, that's indulging, right? Indulging in the body. So that is what you want to avoid on the other hand. So on the one side, avoid the displeasure. On the other side, avoid too much indulgence. But if if you're going to make a mistake, if you're going to err, if you're going to go too far in one direction, err on the side of indulgence. Because at least then you will enjoy your meditation, right? If you err on the side of pain, you're going to have a bad time. So err on the right side, and then at least you will enjoy what you're doing here. And all of this is very important. I remember a horror story which I was part of myself. I was in Singapore a few years ago, and I was living with this man. He was a Malaysian man. He was working in Singapore and living in Malaysia, traveling back and forth all the time. You can imagine the stress and all the things that he had because of that. And I stayed in his apartment for a few days because I was there to give some talks and things in Singapore. And he told me, he one day said, "Oh, you know, Bhante, can I please talk to you? I have some, you know, desperate things I want to talk to you about." And he told me that he had been on one retreat in his life, only one, and that was many, many years ago already. So that already sort of set the alarms bell ringing. But you've been on one retreat, you never go back, something isn't quite right. And he told me that this retreat had been so terrible, so absolutely awful, so much pain, so much tension, so much discomfort. Everything was so bad that he said, "Never ever in my whole life will I go back and do a meditation retreat again." That's what he told me. And he sort of wanted me to say something wise about that. And I tried to tell him, well, you know, meditation retreats are different. Depends on who your teacher is. You know, some teachers are more kind of relaxed. It depends on where you go. But that showed me the danger of actually going too far. That was an extreme case. But it shows you the danger of going too far in one direction towards pain. And if you are going to have success in meditation, if you're going to have success in the spiritual life, if you're going to be able to lift yourself up to become a more happy, more light, more beautiful person, it's going to take time. It's going to take years and years of practice, gradually moving along. And the only way you're going to be able to sustain it year after year, maybe till the end of your life, the only way you're going to be able to sustain that is if you enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, you're not going to be able to sustain it. So make sure that you have as smooth a retreat as you possibly can. And what you find, when you find this beautiful middle way between pain and between indulgence, what happens is that the body starts to disappear. Why? Because the body is only important if there is pain there, the body is important. The mind goes out of the body because it wants to resolve the pain, right? We don't want to have pain. So the mind goes out of the body to resolve the pain. If we indulge, if we have too much pleasure through the body, through the senses, then again the mind goes out to the senses, out to the body, because it has some business there. It wants to experience happiness through the body. But when there is neither pain nor pleasure in the body starts to become irrelevant, right? You know, what's the point of the body if you can't either have pleasure or pain? So that's how it starts to disappear. And this is the idea of that middle way here. There's no pleasure, there's no pain. You find that beautiful middle way where everything starts to disappear and becomes nice and peaceful. So this is how to deal with the body in meditation. The body doesn't really have any place in meditation. The body is just usually a nuisance. It's a hindrance, so you want to get rid of it as fast as possible. And the way to do that is just to allow it to disappear in this way, by finding the middle way. So this is one way of looking at the middle way. Another way of understanding the middle way is to look at it from a mental point of view. All the things that are happening in our minds, and two of like the extreme qualities, you can call them, in the mind, is on the one hand is tiredness. On the other hand is restlessness, right? Tiredness and restlessness are a problem in meditation practice. And these are two extremes again, and we try to find the way in between these things. So why is it that the mind is restless? Why is it tired? And this is important to understand. It is restless and tired for many reasons, but one of the reasons is because, and this is again one of those big dangers in meditation practice, is using too much force in your meditation. And to understand what is going on and why this doesn't work, remember what it's like in ordinary life when you concentrate yourself. What happens when you use concentration in ordinary life, right? You go to the job, you're writing something, and because perhaps you don't like what you're writing, it's a report you have to do, something that isn't really all that interesting, What do you have to do? You have to force yourself, right? You have to force your attention onto what you're doing. Yeah? Or you are reading something, again, perhaps in a work-related context, and you read, it's not really all that exciting. It's one of those things that you have to read to get through. Yeah? How are you able to read something that you don't really enjoy? Yeah? The answer is you have to use a certain force, right? You have to force your attention onto the object. And of course, you know what it's like. If you had a long day and you had to force your attention onto what you're doing all the time, when you get back home in the evening, how do you feel? You feel tired, right? You feel exhausted. And that is precisely because of all the force you have been using throughout the day. That's the reason for the tiredness. Or perhaps you feel restless if you have been kind of using a lot of force. Sometimes you have been doing things all the time. You may also feel restless as well. That's another end result sometimes, using too much force. So the answer then, and this is again is very simple but very profound, is that when you meditate, you do not want to use the sort of concentration that you have to use at work or you have to use anywhere else to fulfill a particular task. That is the wrong kind of concentration. The force of the mind which brings the mind onto the object. So what you have to do instead, you have to withdraw that force. You have to just allow it to die down. And you have to find another way of applying your attention to the object. And that other way is to have to find something beautiful in that object. If you find something beautiful in the object, what happens? Your attention is naturally drawn to the object. If there's something wonderful about the breath, if the breath is really beautiful, you will stay with it, right? Because the mind wants to be there, because it's nice to be there. So this is the difference between the concentration of the world and the one-pointedness of mind, or the concentration that we're trying to achieve in meditation. One is a forced concentration. The other one is a natural concentration that happens because it's nice, it's beautiful, you want to be here. And then it's so easy to meditate, right? You're just here. I had to do anything at all. There's a natural hold on your meditation object, whatever it is, because it is so nice to be there. That is the way to move forward in the meditation practice. And that's how you find, again, this middle way between restlessness on the one hand and tiredness on the other. Sometimes you just have to wait. And as the time goes by on this retreat, you will find that, you know, the old habits from lay life, the restlessness, the tiredness, whatever, will die away, and then the mind kind of comes forth and becomes naturally bright. And one of the jobs of somebody like Ajahn Brahm is to make sure that you have a good time, right? So he will kind of lift your spirits up, and then you will feel happy and glad, and you will meditate, and you will get that inspiration from just being here and listening to some of his talks. That is one of the things of the jobs of the teacher, is to make you feel inspired and happy while you're on this retreat. So that is another way of looking at the middle way. And there is a third way of looking at the middle way, and this is to find the middle between ill will and desire. And one of the things that you will find on a retreat like this, it is very easy for these kind of defilements to come up in the mind. You've got 9 days for yourself, 9 days which are very different from the life you normally have, right? This is a very different situation. You're not going to talk very much. Suddenly everything changes, and it's very easy for these defilements from life in the from ordinary life to come back during this particular 9-day retreat. And to avoid that, one of the ways to avoid particularly the ill will and the irritation to come up is to... You will find that when you live so close with so many people, even though you have your separate rooms or whatever, still, it is still fairly close, right? You will be in a meditation hall together, you will often eat together and all these kind of things. So because of that, it's very easy to sometimes get irritated by the people around you. It's just human, right? You don't have to feel bad about being irritated by others. Everybody, it happens to everybody now and again. So to avoid that, and this is one of the things I would recommend you to do on this meditation retreat, remember how fortunate you are to be with such a wonderful group of people around you. Isn't it amazing? Here is 60 people dedicated just to meditation practice, just to kindness, just to developing the mind. All of you here are people who keep precepts, who try to do something good in life to develop your spiritual inner being. Isn't that a wonderful thing to be with people like this? So when you remember that, when you remember the wonderful qualities of the people around you, it is so hard to actually get angry and upset. Even if they do something which seems insensitive or wrong or whatever, that can sort of be blotted out because you know the big picture is so beautiful. And then you have the idea, so every day, do a bit of metta meditation. Remind yourself every day, wow, how fortunate I am to have these kind of companions in the spiritual life. Isn't it wonderful that people like this exist in the world? It's quite rare, isn't it? When you look at the world as a whole, there aren't that many people who have these kind of qualities. What a wonderful thing it is. And then you have a sense of metta, you have a sense of joy to have these kind of companions, and then you can sort of let go of all the negativity that might otherwise arise. What a wonderful thing that is. Also remember that when somebody does something which may seem insensitive, just remember that we are also different. We come from different points of views. We do things for different reasons. You can't really understand other people. So give them the benefit of the doubt. It's okay. You don't really understand. It's fine. At the bottom, it comes back to the same thing. These are a very good bunch of people that you're with here on this retreat. And by thinking like this, you are moving into that middle way between anger or ill will and desire on the other hand. Because metta, kindness, is precisely that. When you have metta, when you have kindness for the people around you, you certainly don't have any anger, nor do you have much desire, because metta is one of those beautiful states that's very fulfilling in its own right. And when you have a fulfilling state in its own right, you don't actually seek for happiness in the senses. You don't seek for happiness in the external world because you already have it inside of you, right? It's already there. And this is the power of these things. So these are some of the ways. And again, by finding that spiritual happiness, you can find it through metta, you can find it by doing various kind of recollections, recollection of your own good conduct, recollection of the Buddha and the Dhamma, these kind of things. And all of these things give rise to that spiritual joy, the spiritual happiness. And that spiritual happiness, that is the middle way. That is the way which goes between these things. And that takes you along on the meditation path. So those are some of the hints, just very simple hints for how to make this meditation retreat work. I'll talk a little bit about the eight precepts next, because is anybody who doesn't know the eight precepts here? I'm sure you probably all know the eight precepts already, right? Yeah, okay. You probably told before, perhaps even. But I want to talk about the eight precepts a bit anyway, because these can be looked at from many different angles. And again, if you look at these precepts from the right angle, they become very supportive in your meditation practice. So the first precept we all know is that we shouldn't kill any beings, right? So that is like the negative side of the precept. And that is one thing already. Shouldn't kill any living beings. That already takes away a lot of suffering that you would otherwise have. But it's important to remember that one of the things about Buddhism, there's always two sides to things. And in this case, the one side of the issue is that we shouldn't do the bad things. And that takes away the remorse and the regret. But there's also the other side of these precepts. And that is, we should actually do the positive things, right? It's not just about not doing the bad. It's about doing the good, doing good things. And it's actually the doing the good that often gives rise to happiness. And so you will find that one of the things you can do on this retreat to give rise to happiness is sometimes just to sit back. And because all of you are here, or many of you anyway, have been practicing Buddhism for a long time and been doing the right thing for a long time, sometimes you can just sit back and you can kind of allow your memory to go into the past and ask yourself, allow the memory to bring up any kind of good actions you've done in the past, any kind of kindness to other beings, any kind of help, whatever you have done towards other beings. And then if you are in a good mood, you're having a good day, and you just allow your own memory to go back by itself, Don't use too much force, because if you use force, you will find out that is not a natural thing. Just allow the mind to go by itself. The mind will naturally, when it is in a good state, it will naturally go back to those nice things from the past. Because there's like an attraction there, you know. Happy state is attracted to other happy states. It's a natural thing. So allow that to happen. And you will see that many of the good things that you have done in the past will actually arise during this meditation retreat. You're doing something good, you're doing something wholesome, and that will bring up other wholesome things. That will reinforce the meditation. Everything comes together and becomes very beautiful. But don't just rely on things from the past. Also, if you have a chance, do nice things now during the retreat. And the reason for that is because the things that you have done the most recently are likely to be the things that are most easy to remember in the mind, right? So if you can do something nice in this retreat, show some courtesy to somebody, help a little insect, do some whatever it is, and you sit down and meditate afterwards, if you do that from a pure heart, you will find it's very powerful. I know for myself, sometimes I have done the most insignificant little acts of kindness, things which I thought at the time were completely absolutely nothing, like helping an insect out of the water, right? It was about to die. You help it out. Feeding the kangaroos around my little hut in the forest. Things like that. And you do them. And later on, they come back to you. And you feel so happy about that. And you feel happy because you did it purely, completely, selflessly. There was no obligation for you to do these things. You did it simply out of compassion for that being. And that is the kind of act that becomes very powerful. So these little things come back and they pay massive interest after you do them. And of course, the great benefit is that if you do this on a retreat like this, and you see how powerful it is, then when later on you go back again to your ordinary life and you understand the power of these things, then you put them into practice even more, right? Put them into practice even more when you come back on the retreat next year. It's even more powerful, and it builds up and it builds up like an avalanche and becomes really, really strong here. So this is, these are wonderful things to do. So remember, precept keeping is not just about not doing the bad. It's about doing the good, about doing beautiful things. And this gives so much power in the meditation practice. And then there is, of course, the second precept about not stealing. That's easy enough to understand. The opposite of not stealing is to be generous, right? Be generous. It's very similar to being kind. And I remember when I was at Makuti once, again, Makuti in the forest, I was sitting outside eating my lunch. And then as I was sitting there eating, there was this kangaroo coming in on the walking path from the other end. And it kind of walking towards me, very kind of goal-oriented, you know, towards me. You could see the ball there. It was very clear what was going on. So it was moving towards me. And I was getting a bit worried as it was coming closer and closer. And it eventually got all the way up to me. And it kind of tilts its little head and it looks into my ball. It's almost like it's picking out the good pieces, right? And then it starts lowering its head into my bowl. And then I sort of get a bit worried because I'm not really ready to share my food quite in that way with a kangaroo. So I put my hands over the bowl, right? And then the amazing thing, when I do that, the kangaroo takes its little legs, puts them on my hand and tries to pull them apart. It's true. This is what happened to me. At that point, I thought, okay, this is too much. This is going too far. So I get up and I sort of push the kangaroo out of the way. But this shows you the power of generosity, right? The power of generosity is that beings around you feel safe. Beings around you feel they can trust you. Beings around you get this sense that they can do almost whatever they want, almost go too far in a sense. But it's beautiful. When you think about it afterwards, actually it's very nice. It gives a lot of joy when that happens because there is a kind of sense of mutual trust there. It was very beautiful. So these are the things that generosity does. It creates trust. It creates a mutual bonding between people and animals, or whatever it is. So remember that. And you will find that even on a retreat like this, there's lots of opportunities to do little acts of generosity, even just tiny little things. And they will, again, help you to propel you forward in your meditation practice. Then there is the third precept. The third precept is about non-sensuality, basically, no sexual activity. And this also is a very useful precept. You can basically think, expand it to include all sensual activities. Because now is the time to move away from sensuality and move towards the spiritual happiness instead. These are two opposites. It's important to understand that. These are two completely opposite things. You cannot indulge in sensuality and attain spiritual happiness at the same time. These are contrary to each other. So when you hear about all these things of people who indulge in sensuality and also have good meditation, don't believe that. It's impossible, because they are different things. Sensuality goes out into the world, right? It's the very nature. It's the senses going out into the world. Meditation is about dropping the senses. You cannot have both drop the senses and be involved in the sense at the same time. It's very obvious. So if you're going to have success in meditation, you have to drop that sensuality to a large extent. And there is a very nice sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya, and this is the Lady Visakha. I'm sure you've heard of the Lady Visakha, who was the Buddha's foremost lay disciple. And she would go to the monastery pretty much every week, every fortnight. She would go and do Posita Day, the observance days. She would keep the 8 precepts, and she would meditate. And on one of these occasions, when she went to the monastery, she went to the Buddha and asked him, how should I keep the observance day in a good way so that it is of great fruit and great benefit, right? It's a good, excellent question. It's a very simple question, but it's really those simple questions that we need answers to. Because this is straight to the heart of what Buddhist practice is all about. How do we do this so it is of great fruit and great practice? And very useful, because she was keeping the 8 precepts. This is exactly the thing that you will be keeping over the next 9 days. It's a very similar kind of situation. And then the Buddha said to her, well, there are two bad ways of keeping the 8 precepts. 2 bad ways which don't work. And one of them, he was describing some kind of strange practice, which I'm not going to go into. But the other way that he was talking about was that, you know, he said, well, when you meditate, if you sit there and you think about, well, tomorrow I'm not going to be on the 8 precepts anymore, so tomorrow I'm going to eat this, and I'm going to see this kind of show, and I'm going to wear this kind of nice clothes, you know, today I have to wear all white, very boring. And if you think like that, if you indulge in all the things that you're going to be doing tomorrow when you're off these terrible precepts, that is the wrong way of practicing. And if you practice like that, it's not going to be of great fruit or great benefit, right? It's not going to be very useful. It's very true, right? It's so easy to get caught into that thinking about things back home, right? I'm sure it happened to everybody, every single one of you here during these 9 days, at least a little bit. For some of you, maybe more, for some of you, less. But it's so easy, because the habit is so strong. It's such an incredibly powerful habit. It's actually very hard to let go of. So then the Buddha said, what you should do instead, the right way of practicing the 8 precepts, so it is of great fruit and great benefit, is when you meditate, you should recollect the qualities of the Buddha, the qualities of the Dhamma, the qualities of the Sangha, your virtue, your generosity, and there's one more as well. That is what you should be doing. And these are the things I was just talking about before, right? When you just sit back and you allow the memory of your past virtue or your past generosity to arise in your mind, and just enjoy that. Wow, what a wonderful thing I did. And you allow yourself to actually enjoy that sense of having done something beautiful in the past. And this is the right way. And then you feel happy. And once you feel happy, then mindfulness is natural. Why? Because if you're happy, you want to be here, right? If you have a natural happiness, your mind doesn't want to go anywhere else. So mindfulness becomes natural. When mindfulness is natural, meditation is easy, because you're already here. So happiness is this kind of glue that makes meditation work. And you see this in the suttas. The Buddha talks about this again and again and again. Happiness is the core of all meditation practice. And happiness comes from a pure heart, from kindness, virtue, and all these kind of things. This is again one of Ajahn Brahm's, of course, jobs while you're here. That is to make you feel happy, right? And this is what Ajahn Brahm is very good at. He will inspire you, he will keep you happy, and he will tell some nice stories, and then afterwards you feel really glad, you feel really light, and you had a good laugh or whatever, and you feel very good. And then you can meditate, right? And you can feel a sense of happiness already. And then you can allow your mind to go to all these positive things, and things will kind of work well for you. So allow yourself to be inspired. Don't be afraid of inspiration. Inspiration is one of these important things on the Buddhist path. When you listen to Ajahn Brahm, it's a bit like being inspired by the Sangha, right? When you're with Ajahn Brahm, it feels very good, right? When I listen to Ajahn Brahm talks, I almost always feel inspired. There's something very real about them, something very profound, something very, wow, this is it. You know, you're hearing, you get this feeling, you're hearing the real Dhamma. At least that's the feeling I have. I hear the real Dhamma when I listen to Ajahn Brahm. So I feel inspired. And then afterwards, meditation works well. So this again, the middle way, the true kind of happiness, getting away from sensuality, finding happiness in the right kind of things. This is what it really is, the essence of meditation practice. Then you have the fourth precept, which is about not lying. And if you're going to keep quiet for 9 days, it's very easy not to lie. So that is it's not a major issue, but one of the things that people sometimes find is that it's actually quite hard to be quiet for 9 days. Sometimes they feel it's oppressive, and they feel they have to talk, right? And be careful of that. Be careful you don't feel oppressed by the quietness. Enjoy the quietness. Enjoy the peace. Don't allow yourself to be oppressed. If you feel really badly oppressed, then take a friend, go for a walk in the forest and have a chat. That is always much better rather than feeling negative and, you know, really feeling having a hard time. So if you can't really, if it's too difficult, it's always good to do that which relieves the difficulty and don't just persist in having a difficult time. But one very nice way of thinking about peace, of course, the first thing is just to enjoy the peace of being quiet, right? If you can enjoy that peace, that's already very beautiful already. But the other thing that you can do, and this is what I recommend you to do. First of all, you think, wow, I have all these wonderful people together with me here on this retreat. And why shouldn't I give a nice gift to many of these people who are here? There's always, in a group like this, there's all kind of meditators. Some who are very good, who will get some very nice meditation during these 9 days. I can guarantee that there are some people here who have very nice meditation. And then there are others who will struggle. And this is humanity, right? We are all on different areas on this path. And that's perfectly okay. But think of that. Think that there are many people around you who have the potential for very deep and beautiful meditation. So give them that gift. I will give you the gift of silence. Please, this is my gift to you. And then when you think of it in that way, that you're giving a gift to somebody, the gift of peace, the gift of silence, then that silence becomes something beautiful. It becomes something that comes from your heart and something that you can actually use then in your meditation practice. Even if it isn't always easy, it can still be something beautiful and something powerful. So that is the non-lying and the positive side of not lying. Okay, so now those are the main precepts, and then we have the next one, which is not indulging in alcohol and drugs. So I'm sure that that's fairly easy for you to do. Again, this is all about clarity of mind, right? So you want to have clarity of mind. So of course, the beginning of that is not clouding your mind with drugs and alcohol. But the other side of that is the whole meditation practice is about that, about clarity. And the interesting how the Buddha spoke about intoxication, because it's not just intoxication through alcohol and drugs. There's all kinds of intoxication. Intoxication through sense pleasures, intoxication by feeling that you are, the Buddha talks about intoxication of youth. I'm young, I can sort of do whatever I want. And then you do all kind of crazy stuff because you're young and you forget that life is shorter. And before you know it, it's going to be over. Intoxication of health, forgetting that sickness is around the corner. But in particular, the intoxication of sensuality is the one you want to move away from. And then when you're not intoxicated, intoxication means your mind is distorted, right? You can't see clearly. That's what intoxication means. And when you have sensual desires, your mind is basically distorted. You can't see clearly. So you want to get away from that intoxication. And that's when clarity arises. And you will see this in the mind over a retreat like this. It will go up and down. And you will sometimes have clear moments, and sometimes you will have moments when you're utterly confused, and then you might get clear again, right? This is life. Life kind of goes in these kind of cycles. And just notice the beauty of clarity. When you're clear, it's like, wow, now I understand. Now I can see her. Now I know what's going on. Now everything suddenly makes sense. When you're confused, nothing makes sense. You have no idea what's going on. And one thing I often say to people, if you're ever going to make a decision in life about anything, never make it if your mind is clouded by anything. If you're angry, if you have desires, if you're confused, there's always the wrong time to make a decision. Make a decision when the mind is clear. That is the right time. I know that from my own time in the monastery. Sometimes, and I lived in Bodhinyana Monastery for almost 20 years now. And sometimes I've sort of been, oh, I've had enough of Bodhinyana Monastery. I'd like to go somewhere else. But then I ask myself, why do I want to go somewhere else? What is the reason? Let me wait till I really have clarity of mind. And when I'm clear, I'm very happy here. This is the place I should stay. It's going in the right way. It is improving. Things are getting better. So this is where I should stay here. Okay, then there is the precept of not eating at the wrong time. And then there is the precept at the end about not using luxurious and large beds. And these are precepts of restraint, so they kind of hold you back a little bit. And that is one of the things also that you learn through meditation practice. There's some degree of restraint, right? You learn how to hold back. You learn how to look at things in a different way, so the mind doesn't go out into the world. Restraint is not so much about willpower. In fact, it shouldn't really be willpower at all. It's about, as Ajahn Brahm says, wisdom power, right? You use your wisdom to look at things in a new way. And you are forced to do that to some extent when you can't have any food in the evening. Of course, you use whatever is there, the chocolate, the tea, whatever. Please use that so you don't get hungry or whatever. You use those things. But then you also can't have your ordinary meal. And for some of you, that will be difficult, right? The evening comes and you will feel hungry because you're so used to it. It's very easy for me. I've been a monk for 20 years. You know, when I see food in the evening, it's no big deal. But for most of you who are used to eating in the evening, it can be quite hard. So that is the time when you actually learn something about yourself. How can I restrain myself in a natural way so that this doesn't become a problem for me? And you learn how to look at things in a new way. You ask yourself, well, okay, so all of these cravings that I have, you can see the craving in your mind, and you can see how disturbing it is, how problematic it is, and you know that it is not going to lead to anything good. And then you ask yourself whether you can turn your mind in a different direction towards some other kind of happiness. And in this way, you learn about yourself. And this is one of the great opportunities that you have on a retreat like this, is actually to learn about yourself, to learn about your problems, your defilements, your upsets, your angers, your desires, all these kind of things. And you will see this in yourself during this retreat, and you will see it with more clarity than you usually have in daily life. And this is incredibly useful because you will then know where your problems are. You know what you have to deal with. You know, this person really irritates me. Okay, how can I learn to look at this person in a new way? What are the good qualities in this person? How can I forgive them? How can I understand this person in such a way that I don't feel irritation anymore? These are the desires that hinder me in life. Why do I have these desires? And the reason is because you see something beautiful there. Is it really that beautiful as you think? And when you start to understand, this is what you will see again, that it hinders your meditation. It takes you away from true peace and happiness. It will then decrease your desire in those areas. But most important is to understand the ill will, because that is the biggest problem for most people, and it's the biggest spiritual hindrance on this path. So that is a little bit about restraint, about not eating at the wrong time and not sleeping in high and luxurious beds. And the last one, the very last of the precepts, is the precept about not adorning oneself, wearing makeup, living a very simple life while you're here. And this is a great thing, isn't it? I mean, we spend so much of our life trying to look right, combing our hair, using makeup, dressing in the right way. It goes for both genders, right? We're so concerned about appearances, about what everything is like, what other people think, all these things. This is your chance to relax all that, not worry about these things, and just feel that how nice it is not to worry about things at all. You can look exactly what you like. You can look scruffy and tired. You can wear what you like. You don't care one inch, not care at all what other people around you think. What a wonderful thing that is. You don't have to live up to any standard, not have to live up to anything at all. So just enjoy that. Don't have to smile to anybody if you don't want to smile. Don't have to do anything. Just relax. Wow, how wonderful that is. And it's also, not only is it nice to be able to relax in that way, not having to live up to any standards, but it's also very nice because it takes away so much of the sense of self, right? When you look at yourself in the mirror and you think, do I look right? Is it up to the standards that I think I should be? And some days you are kind of, you don't feel you look the way you should. Other days you're kind of happy about it. It's a terrible thing because there's so much sense of self in there, so much identification with the body and who you are. And by not worrying about that, so don't look at yourself too much in the mirror while you're here. Forget about the mirror. Use it to brush your teeth or shave or whatever you have to do, but don't look at yourself in the mirror. There's something very compulsive about mirrors. If it's there, you have to sort of look. Don't do that. Don't act on that compulsion. Allow the mirrors to be here. And very interesting, in the monastic code for monks and nuns, there's actually a rule that you're not supposed to look at yourself in a mirror, except if you are doing something that is useful, like shaving or something like that. You shouldn't look at yourself in the mirror. And it has the same kind of feeling, right? Not to create a sense of self. And the more you forget about that, it's a sense of freedom. You're forgetting about yourself. You lose your kind of self-consciousness. You forget about who you are, and the sense of self starts to decline. And this also is one of the great necessities for actually getting deep meditation. Wow, sense of self disappearing. And this is the sort of thing that, of course, Ajahn Brahm will be talking a lot about during this retreat. So, that is just another way of looking at those precepts, a way which may be able to kind of push you along a little bit in your meditation practice. That is all I want to say tonight. So hopefully some of those things will be useful for you. If not, well, what can I say? So, do you have are there any questions or anything before we call it a day? Is everybody happy? Everybody okay? Ajahn Brahm will be here tomorrow morning, and then you have. Things will start in for real. So, everybody okay? Yeah? Good. Okay, so I wish you all a nice retreat. Have a good time. Enjoy yourself. And then you will be practicing for a long time in the future. And you become so, and it will, your whole life will become a blessing, both for yourself and also for other people around you.